Good evening and welcome back to Coast AM. It's a pleasure to be here. Tonight, we're taking a look at three of the most horrifying true life ghost stories from right here in the United States. The Haunting in Connecticut, Carmen Snedeker. Carmen Reed is with us this evening. Andrea Perrin from the Perrin family, featured in the Conjuring movie. And from Amityville, we've got Christopher Lutz, the youngest boy from the family, is with us this evening as well. We heard from Christopher, we heard from Carmen in the last segment talking about the Warren, Ed and Lorraine Warren's involvement in their cases, Andrea. Now, I know that there was actually good friends of mine, Keith and Carl, that were involved in the initial investigation of your home when the claims came out, and then it was turned over to the Warrens. Were they as deeply involved in your story as they appeared to be in the movies?
Well, Keith Johnson came to our home in August of 1973. We had already lived there for a couple of years. and Keith said that he had received a phone call from my mother asking if he could step in and assist us. However, my mother had no idea who they were when they pulled into our yard, and to this day said, "I never called anyone. I never asked anyone for any assistance." However, you know Keith well enough to know that he is disarmingly gentle, and he immediately made a connection with our family and felt our situation as it was transpiring. He had an incredible experience in the house the day that he was there. My mother did not feel as warmly toward his brother, Carl. You're also well aware at the time that Keith was very much practicing in the light, and Carl not so much. So she picked up on that and allowed Keith a tour of the house. And he had an experience there that prompted him to seek out Ed and Lorraine Warren and to involve them in the case. They did not come until the eve of the evening before Halloween in 1973, because they thought that if they came when they perceived that the veil would be thinnest, that they would have more of a chance of seeing some type of manifestation in the house. And my mother at that time explained to them that it didn't matter what time of year or day, or, you know, it didn't matter. There was no veil at the Arnold Estate. However, when they appeared at our doorway, at our kitchen door the night before Halloween in 1973, she had no idea who they were. And they seemed, you know, harmless enough. She thought their car had broken down and they needed to use the phone. And when they came in and explained who they were and explained that Keith Johnson had informed them of our predicament, she did start speaking with them and was forthcoming with them and sensed that perhaps they were some type of authority in the paranormal, which she didn't even use that word or know that word at that time. You know, keep in mind, Dave, we were completely caught unawares when we moved into this original colonial home. We thought of it in terms of its history, not about, you know, what spirit might be there. That wasn't even on the radar for our family at all. And the Warrens came five or six times over the course of about a year and a half, culminating in a very bad scenario during which my mother was infested with something that was purely evil. I do not call it a demon. I don't know what a demon is. I've never seen a demon. You know, Carmen was talking earlier about the stench, the smell of rotting flesh. That was routine in our house. That would happen frequently. But whatever it was that infested my mother that night and attacked my mother that night, I do not blame Ed or Lorraine for. They brought with them a medium named Mary Pastorella, and she literally conjured the spirit and kicked open wide the doors to the netherworld and invited everything in to determine the culprit that was causing the problem. And as far as I am concerned, that's spiritual malpractice. And I think that that's what actually caused all hell to break loose in our house that night.
Did your mother, was she really possessed by something at some point during your time there?
I would say that my mother was oppressed, that there was a spirit in the house that was, by the way, not Bathsheba Sherman. The spirit that was haunting and taunting my mother died before Bathsheba was even born. And when she would approach my mother and manifest in full form and threaten my mother, she used language that was already archaic in the 1800s. Also, Bathsheba died from a stroke and ensuing paralysis. And the spirit that was after my mother clearly, obviously had a broken neck, which leads us to believe that it was more likely Mrs. John Arnold that was found hanging in the barn in the late 1700s at the age of 93. And she perceived herself to be the mistress of the house, and when she threatened my mother, said to her in an incantation or a chant of some kind, "'Twas mistress once, afore you came, and mistress here will be anon." That language was already out of use in the 1800s.
How did Bathsheba become the kind of scapegoat for this case as being considered a witch? Was that something that you all believed in at one point, or was this something that Ed and Lorraine Warren pointed you to?
No, to Lorraine's credit, the night that they came into the house, she walked over to our big black cast iron stove in the kitchen, and she covered her eyes and touched the corner of the stove and was silent for a moment, you know, pausing, and then she said, "I sense a malignant presence in this house. Her name is Bathsheba." Now, she had no access at that time to any of the history of the township or of the house in particular. And Bathsheba Sherman did live at the Sherman Farm, which, as the crow flies, was only about a mile away from our house. She did have some attachments to the farm, according to the town historian that we spoke with at length, and my mother did. We were just little kids, but he told my mother the story of Bathsheba, and that while she was either babysitting in that house or was with an infant in the Arnold home, that the infant died, and upon further inspection of the corpse, it was found that a needle had been impaled at the base of its skull, and the cause of death was listed as convulsion. Consequently, there was an inquest held in the town of Chepachet because Burleville was not even incorporated yet. And she basically got let off the hook. There were, you know, there was no such thing as DNA analysis, no forensics. And she basically said, "I don't know how this happened, but, you know, the baby died. I'm so upset. I'm terribly upset." And she was just in the court of public opinion. The woman was tried and convicted, but in terms of the legalities around it, she was basically absolved of any guilt around that. However, it was the folklore, the subsequent folklore that built up around her. The women in town, according to the historian Mr. McEachern, he told my mother that the women in town hated her, and that the men would look at her with rapacious eyes because she was such a raving beauty. And the folklore built up around her that she had sacrificed this infant to the devil for eternal youth and beauty. You know, back in those days, I mean, if you'd gone even 100 years back before Bathsheba, using the word witch in conjunction with a woman could cost her life. That was a very dangerous word to throw around. But Mr. McEachern did not think highly of Bathsheba. He did admit that she was, he told us that she was an Arnold, that she was related by marriage to the Arnold family. But she was not actually an Arnold. She was born of the Thayer and Taft families, which are two very old families in Rhode Island that came down from the Massachusetts Bay Colony and followed Roger Williams when he founded the colony of Rhode Island.
We have to take a quick break, Andrea. Andrea, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to continue fleshing out all of your stories. But I'm also curious, after your experiences and through all the time of research, because I know each one of you have followed a different path and a different journey to try to understand. I wonder what your thoughts are on what you experienced then and what you believe those things to be now. What was it that you've dealt with in your lives? Christopher Lutz, our guest from the Amityville Horror, Carmen Snedeker from The Haunting in Connecticut, Andrea Perrin from The Conjuring, that, and in about an hour and a half, we're going to open up phone lines for you to call in and be a part of the show. Actually, in about 45 minutes, rather, if you have stories of your own, you want some insight and advice on your own hauntings, Please be a part of the show and give us a call. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more of the best in overnight talk radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Halloween is right around the corner, and we are doing our annual Halloween for Hunger campaign with Second Harvest Heartland to help benefit people right here in the United States. Their buying power at this food shelf organization is so powerful that every $1 that gets donated supplies 3 meals to people in need. That's right, $1 will help one person eat 3 square meals that day. And we've got a donation link right on my website at darknessradio.com. We're sitting at about $7,000 of our $10,000 goal. Last year, our goal was $5,000, and with the help of the Coast to Coast audience, we reached almost $8,000. We're at $7,000 already. I know we can surpass that and hit the $10,000 mark with your help. As a matter of fact, if all the listeners in Coast to Coast land just gave $1, we would make a major change around the world with the food that we'd be able to supply to our neighbors in need right here in the United States. $1. I know it sounds corny, but $1, that's all you have to donate. Or you can do any amount that makes you comfortable. You can do it by going to darknessradio.com, darknessradio.com. Click on the Second Harvest Heartland Halloween for Hunger banner, make that donation, and be a part of the change. We deeply appreciate it to help us get to that goal. Or you can email me, dave@darknessradio.com. That's dave@darknessradio.com to get information, and I'll send you the link so that you can make the donation. So if you're listening over the podcast of this as a Coast Insider, you can continue to make donations all the way through November 5th at midnight Central Time. So please, if you're listening to the podcast, you can continue to email me, dave@darknessradio.com, or visit our website to make donations all the way until November 5th, 2016 at midnight Central Time and be a part of our program. Tonight, we're talking with extreme paranormal survivors from Haunting in Connecticut, The Conjuring, and Amityville Horror. One thing, if we could wrap up with Andrea, with your story, and as we're kind of wrapping up with the Warrens' involvements in these stories, there was a very strange controversial story that's popped up that your father and Ed had kind of an interesting clash at some point. Is there truth to that rumor, or is that something, again, that Hollywood and the media just kind of blew out of proportion?
No, that comes directly from the horse's mouth. And in fact, I know it made a lot of people very uncomfortable because, you know, there are many people that hold Ed and Lorraine in very high esteem. I personally believe that they came to try to help us. They were just over their heads. But what happened was when my mother was tossed during the seance, infested and tossed across the dining room into our parlor, my father tried to rush to her side, and Ed grabbed his arm to stop him and told him that he could not touch her. And my father turned around and cold cocked him and broke his nose and took him right to the floor. This I know because I not only witnessed it, but I cleaned up the blood out of the wood at 2 o'clock that morning after my mother had been brought back from the concussion that was so severe that happened from the impact with her head as it hit the parlor floor. It was, my father used some, I think you've met my father.
Right, Roger, right.
He used some incredibly spicy language to expel them from the house that night, and they only came back one more time to check. They waited until they knew my father was not there, and they came back to check and see if my mother was still alive, and drove all the way from Monroe, Connecticut to Harrisville, Rhode Island to check and see how she was, because they were as upset by what happened as our family was.
Have fences been mended in the Perrin and Warren family? Are you on friendly terms with Lorraine at this point?
Well, she was at the premiere. I went to the private screening that Warner Brothers offered us about 3 months prior to the opening of the film. And we both came out of opposing elevators and walked directly into each other's arms and just embraced each other. And she cried and cried. And she said, you know, she loved our family. And Ed begged her before his passing in 06 to make sure that while she was still an earthbound soul, to make sure that our family story was told, because Ed always said that of all of the investigations that they conducted over a 40-year-plus career as investigators. They had never come across another case quite like it. He described it as the most disturbing, intense, compelling, and significant of the cases that they had been involved with. But keep in mind, too, Dave, as I've told you, they came 5 or 6 times and spent a few hours at the house each time. But we lived there for 10 years and lived there another 7 years after they were out of the picture. So there were many, many aspects of the haunting that they didn't know anything about. And because the Conjuring was based predominantly on the case files of Ed and Lorraine Warren, Bathsheba became the culprit because Lorraine had identified her as such on her first visit, and so she subsequently blamed everything that went wrong in the house on Bathsheba.
Chris, I want to know, with Amityville, you were very young. How old were you when you moved into that house?
When we were there.
I'm sorry?
I was 7.
You were 7 years old. And so you were, it was 28 days in and out of that location. Did you have a grasp and a concept of what you and your family were going through? Did you understand the idea that it was paranormal in nature and what was really happening?
No, I think at that age, I didn't have any knowledge of anything that was like outside of the physical realm. You know, at that age, you're watching Scooby-Doo.
Right, but with that said, you saw a full manifestation appear in your room and was standing there.
Outside of my room, but yes.
Right, and made its appearance.
For it to be standing but not have legs from the knees down was messing with me. That scared the hell out of me. I didn't know what it was. It was as definite as the shadow, but not against the wall.
Did your parents keep you pretty isolated and insulated from what was really going on in that house? Did you know on the 28th day when you pulled out of there why you were leaving?
Well, I knew that my parents were freaked out. I had never seen George actually scared. I mean, this was a guy that was a black belt in jiu-jitsu, he's a former Marine. He was a tough dude, and so it was weird to look at this guy in such a panic.
But did you realize that it was because
I know
of the parents?
Why?
Yeah.
I mean, I knew what had happened in my house, but didn't in my personal bedroom and the top floor. It just was, but I, you know, at that point, I didn't know what was going on for them on a floor down below me. But yeah, they were freaked out.
Right. And here you've looked at your life through this. I mean, and you've had a very unique perspective, especially being such a young child and having to grow up with that stigma of being the Amityville Horror kid and being somebody that survived that story. Did you embrace the idea of the paranormal after you left that to try to understand what happened, or did you just try to distance yourself from it until adulthood?
Well, I wanted to get as far away from anything to do with anything outside of what I could touch and know how it worked. It wasn't until years later as an adult that I began to look back on my own experience with a whole fresh set of eyes and understanding of different things. There's a major part of my story that most of your audience probably doesn't know about. You know, when the Amityville Horror was introduced to the public, in the telling of the story, my adopted father, George Lutz, is portrayed as a man that's victim of this house and a hero to the family in the end. Well, we're all running out to the van, he goes back for the dog, is in a bath of black tar slime, you know, and then they get in the van just when everything's working out and they get away. And then the story's over and everybody's happy.
But the reality to that is much different. We'll hear about that when we return as we continue talking about extreme hauntings with survivors of 3 of the most famous cases in history. Plus, what do these 3 want to know from each other about their cases? They'll be interacting with each other, and a little later on we'll open up phone lines so you can call in, tell your own stories, get advice, insights, and thoughts from extreme paranormal survivors. We'll do that as we continue our journey here on Coast to Coast AM. Good evening. Welcome back to the show. Coast to Coast AM, the best in overnight talk radio. We just keep getting better year after year. And if you've missed any part of tonight's show or you'd like to catch up, it's very simple. Go to coasttocoastam.com and become an insider. Join the Insiders Club for a one-year subscription. It's only 15 cents a day, and it will give you unlimited access to shows for the last 5 years. You will get exclusive content, newsletters, live chats with George Nori and some of the best guests from Coast to Coast AM. Go sign up and become a Coast Insider. It makes a great gift as well. So if you know someone that's just as interested as you are, but maybe can't stay up for the late hours, then get them a subscription to the best in overnight talk radio. CoastToCoastAM.com for more information. Our guests tonight are extreme haunting survivors. We have Christopher Lutz from Amityville. We've got Carmen Snedeker from the Haunting in Connecticut case. And we've got Andrea Perrin from The Conjuring. Let's speak real quickly. Carmen, your ideas of the paranormal before moving into that house and how they've changed over the years. Do you believe that ghosts are actual disembodied spirits from humans, or do you think that they are more of a dark force, a demonic entity, if you will?
I believe there's both. I believe there's actually more than two. I believe there are elementals. I believe that there are ghosts. I believe there's demons, and I believe there's angels. I've experienced angels long before I experienced demons, and elementals and human spirits as well. All of them feel very different. All of them I've experienced very differently. I came from a Christian background.
Did you find in that house that you were dealing with multiple layers of infestation? You had human ghosts, the demonic forces, elementals, things like that, all coexisting in one location?
I didn't experience elementals till many years later, but I did experience angels, human spirits. We had a lady that was definitely just a human spirit, and a little black boy, cute little black boy wearing Superman pajamas. Lorraine said that there was a fire that took a lot of children's lives, and that's how the children's spirit got there. The woman, I believe, was actually Mrs. Hallahan. She was an invalid, and she lived in the porch upstairs. Experienced her upstairs and downstairs. And there's also, from another person that was in the house, there was also a captain of the sea. I think that was more of a guardian for him. And then we have the demonic entities. And when I was under severe attack, I was always greeted with an angel.
Did the spirits of the house seem to know or interact with the demonic, or do you think that they're vibrating, for lack of a better term, on different levels where they coexist without knowing or seeing each other?
No, I feel like the human spirits were very aware of the dark entities in the house. They seemed afraid of it, and whenever it was coming, you wouldn't find them.
Why would they stay there, do you think, Carmen? I mean, for gosh sakes, if you're out of your physical form, you're finally in an ethereal or astral form, whatever you want to refer to it as, why would you stay in a location that's infected with demonic presence? Don't you think those spirits would move on?
I think they would if they could have. They were tied there for some reason. I don't pretend to know all the ins and the outs of the spirit world. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of mysteries I still haven't discovered after all of the 20-some-odd years of studying this, and I've studied it intensely, trust me. And there's lots of different theories. The Hebrews believe that the Kabbalists believe that the spirit is tied to the human body. We're a graveyard. So, and what I've experienced hasn't been always that. So I can't say what laws govern the spirit world, and I don't know exactly what they are, but I do know that those spirits could not move on until the priest came in and released them and protected them.
We are going to take another quick break. We'll come back and hear from our guests as they interact amongst each other. What are their questions for each other and their cases? We'll talk with Christopher Lutz. We'll talk with Andrea Perrin and Carmen Reed when we return on Coast to Coast AM. We will be opening phone lines here at the top of the hour if you have questions for our guests, or if you're living through your own nightmarish hell with the paranormal and would like some insights from these three experts, these three survivors of the paranormal. You can certainly call in and be a part of the show. I also want to make a quick mention. We are looking for cases. If you are dealing with a malevolent haunting and feel that you're in danger or threat and looking for answers, you can email me, dave@darknessradio.com. That's dave@darknessradio.com. And we will do our best to put you in touch with people that can help you in your area. Again, email me, dave@darknessradio.com. And if you have questions for our guests and just can't get through on the phone lines, I'll be keeping an eye on my email as well, so you can pass those messages and questions on. Just email me, dave@darknessradio.com, through the remainder of the show, and I will do my best to try to weave them in to the content as we go along. Our guests this evening are here talking about their extreme hauntings and paranormal situations. Each one of you familiar with each other's story. Chris, I know you've been through this since a very early age and have held off on the paranormal, have engaged in the idea of the paranormal, have researched it. What questions do you have for Andrea or Carmen regarding their cases?
Let me speak to Carmen on this, because I kind of also come from a Christian background. And so I see a parallel there.
And just for the record, I don't want people to think that then we're alienating Andrea. She and her family are very Christian in background and belief as well. So they are from that same atmosphere. He's just referring to recent comments that Carmen made. But go ahead, Christopher. What's your question?
What do you think caused what happened in your place? I mean, I believe in cause and effect, and that there's spiritual ramifications for things that have been done.
Well, actually,
from those things.
Yeah, Chris, I want to give you a hug so bad. Anyway, the thing that they determined that happened in my house was necrophilia, fiddling with the dead. And in the instance where, if it was a loved one that was fiddling with the dead, that would be a little more acceptable than a stranger imposing themselves on the spirit. And that can cause other doors. And if there's magic that goes in with that, and some Lorraine hinted that she felt that was going on, necromancy, that can open doors to other beings coming in there. And
now, thinking about what you're saying, where people are opening these doors,
right.
Does anybody know how to close them?
The priest explained it to me this
and
way.
What I mean is the people that are opening them. Most of the time, these people are doing this stuff, and something's coming through. Look, I'll give you an analogy. I restore homes.
Right.
And one of the properties had a metal screen door. It was like with bars and then
iron, right?
In between. And somebody had broken through that doorway through the screen, open that screen up. And you know what? After that was done, anything could go through there that wanted to. And so it wasn't just what they called up at the time, but anything that further came through. And so there was a veil that was initially put between this physical realm and the spiritual realm. And it's not to be messed with. And when they open it and they leave those holes all over the place, what the hell's coming through?
Exactly. Exactly. That's why that so much of the Bible was written to keep people from doing that.
Exactly.
And that's why they say never do that, so that you don't open those doors and that things are left as they are. The priest explained it to me this way. He said, we're all born in a room with no doors. You open the door, you may push it back out through prayer, meditation, fasting, but the door is still there. It's closed. The being's on the other side, and it can
should have been in its original condition where there's a veil between the physical and the spiritual. And once that's messed with,
it can
that continues to have ramifications.
But do you think, you know, I mean, so many people are intrigued, as am I, fascinated with the idea of communicating. Because let's face it, that's the idea of the end of our lives is terrifying to a lot of people. The idea of what comes next and wanting some kind of answer about that, the curiosity behind it. I mean, people can't be faulted for that desire and want to understand what comes next. But should, you know, I mean, do you believe, Carmen, that there is a way to open those portals and close them safely? Or do you think once you've ruptured that with trying to make the communication, it's kind of like a ding in the armor? Once it's already in there, that armor is weakened and it's just going to be so easy to access and destroy.
Well, here's what I can tell you now. I can never be untouched. You know, it's one of those things that no matter what I do, when I am talking to you about what happened in my house, there's like a thread of this being that was in that house that knows exactly where I am and that I am talking about it because I'm giving him recognition. Now, I did not try to communicate with this being, but what I did that night when I went on down the back stairs and I said, all right, you son of a bitch, you want to play with me instead of my children? I gave it permission to attack me because it didn't have permission until that point. So I didn't know it existed until that moment. And when it did come and attack me and smack me around and do all the things that it did to me in that home, well, the house, it was not a home after that, I gave it the permission to. By me giving it that permission, it now has a bead on me that cannot be cut.
Hmm. That's even more unnerving to me. That you'd think that at some point you could break it, and you know, but that's a fascinating aspect of all the stories that I've read up on with the Warrens' involvement. As good as they were at researching and understanding this and working with the Catholic churches, most of the families still had some kind of connection, some kind of strange paranormal activity that followed them well after they were aided by the Warrens or even by the church. Andrea, do you have any questions for our guests as well? I know that you've known them and have worked with them on many different conferences and on many different levels. Do you have anything that's still kind of piqued your curiosity regarding their cases?
Well, Carmen and I really have, you know, I don't, first of all, let me start here. I think that there is no such thing as an expert in the paranormal. The three people that you have on your show tonight, we can't answer every question. We aren't experts, and if we don't know, no one does. So I think that the safest assumption to begin with is that there's a great deal that we don't know, and that certainly persists to this day. I also completely agree with Carmen in terms of the whole notion that once you kick wide open the doors to the netherworld, that you might as well have just taken it off its hinges and burned it. There is no way to ever close that. I thought that in writing the three books that I did, that it would be very cathartic, and that the third book, where we extricated ourselves from the farm, would be the one that brought closure. And in fact, it was the most difficult to write because we learned through that whole process that there were attachments, profound attachments, that were formed when we lived at the farm that have persisted lifelong with every single member of our family. I know that Carmen has been, she calls it a thread or a bead. She's absolutely correct. Once you are touched by spirit, you cannot be untouched. And you can turn your back on that door and pretend it doesn't exist, but eventually something will reach through and tap you on the shoulder and make its presence known. So I think that acceptance is the key. I also agree that Carmen described her multitude of experiences, angelic, demonic, and, you know, just otherworldly beings, light beings. That was our experience as well. And the thing that's most interesting about that is the way that I perceived the farmhouse as a portal, cleverly disguised as a farmhouse. that there were multiple dimensions in action at work at one time in that house. And we have experiences that really back that up. And I know that Carmen does as well. We've talked about this. I've talked with Chris. I've talked with Carmen about our experiences. And there are some striking similarities between, not just that the Warrens were involved, but striking similarities in terms of the types of haunting that we all endured.
But in the case, and we've got a very short period of time here, but in the case of Amityville, having talked to Chris on numerous occasions on the shows, he believes that door was kicked open, in essence, by his stepfather, George, and that's what infected their family, and that he unwillingly and unknowingly helped out with this. Carmen invited this to interact with her in an effort to try to get it to leave her children away. But the parent family, you moved into this house not knowing what was there, not opening up that portal. It wasn't like you asked for it. It wasn't like you were seeking to make that connection. But why do you think that it would still be attached to you even though you didn't incite it and you didn't invite it?
They communicated with it.
Yes. We did. We communicated with it. By the time we left that house, every single one of us had some form of open communication with spirit in that house.
So, in essence, you were giving that permission because you acknowledged. But do you find that people that ignore the case or ignore what's going on, because some people will tell me, should I just ignore it? And when I ignore it, it seems to get angrier. Is the idea to ride out the storm? It just keep ignoring it, because if you're not giving it any attention, you're not giving it that in, it will eventually fade and look for somebody else.
Yes.
Let's start with you, Andrea, go ahead.
Well, everything is energy, sweetheart. Everything is energy. And when you bring five prepubescent girl tomboys into a house that's that active, eight generations of one extended family lived and died in that house prior to our arrival, and probably a dozen of them were still attached to the property. So we provided an ample source of energy for them. Our first day in the house, four of the five children saw a full body apparition, and it was standing 3 feet away from my father, and he didn't see it. That was my first indication that there was something very unique about our perceptions as children in the house. And so, I processed that as a youngster myself at 12 years old with almost a sense of relief and comfort, because I sensed no threat from him. But I did. My reaction was, there is something. There is something else beyond our mortal existence. And that was, even at that tender age, a question that I had in my mind. And I thank you earlier for mentioning that our family, we were Catholic. And the film portrayed us as the pagan pairing, godless heathens, juxtaposed to the devout Roman Catholic Warrens. But that was not the case. And and Chris and Carmen also know, that it's not the faithless that are targeted most often in these types of cases. It's the most faithful. And so I think that was a misperception that was put out in the world through the film that is grossly inaccurate.
We have to go to the top of the hour break. We're going to open up phone lines. And although I understand where you come from saying there is no experts, in the essence of life experience, there is that aspect of it. And I think that's what people refer to when they think of you as experts, because you have gone through it and you've survived. You've come out the other end. And so I understand that's why people are going to have questions. Right, veterans. That might be the best way to explain that. So, if you have your own paranormal experiences going on and you'd like to share those stories with us tonight and get insight regarding that, we'd love to hear from you. If you have respectful questions for our guests to share this evening, we'll also encourage those phone calls. Or you can email me at dave@darknessradio.com, and we'll email and talk those through the show as we progress. Please remember, show respect for our guests. They've taken time out to come here to be a part of this open forum to discuss openly back and forth with you. If there is disrespect shown, you will be disconnected. So let's make this an interesting and open dialogue about the paranormal when we return. I'm Dave Schrader, and you're listening to the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM.